Hello everybody, how's it going today? GoPlasma231 here, back in day to talk about weekly Shonen Jump issue number 45 of 2023. I'm your host Corbin, and like I said, today some weekly Shonen Jump action, as I like to do these videos, and of course right now we're very behind, but that is why I am recording these as often as I can just to get them out, even though I know this is just going to be a long video, and long videos, I enjoy long videos. I really like listening and watching long porn content myself, but man, is it just not fun to record sometimes when you're going for like an hour and you're like, I've still got like three chapters to talk about, but well, I don't care about that. We're just going to get into it. But before we actually get into all of the chapters and stuff, we need to go over the preliminary information that I always like to talk about here. So of course, this is issue number 45. One Piece has the cover this week with Luffy and Kizaru on it. It's a fine cover. It's like just a One Piece Shonen Jump cover. I mean, we get so many of those so frequently, it's sort of like hard to distinguish them. I remember like last year, if I'm not mistaken, in 2022, there was a color page or a spread or whatever, cover of the magazine, which had Luffy in like a spacesuit from like Jax or something. It was like the most random collaboration, but I thought it was really cool just because I love space and everything sort of resounding around it, and sort of seeing that with One Piece, I thought it was pretty fun. But that is completely off topic. How we do things here on the channel is I talk about every series that I read in Shonen Jump this week. This week we actually have 13 series, so a little over half of the magazine at this point, and I'm just going to be going through reviewing each chapter. I read every chapter in any particular order, which is how this video is going to be presented. So first off, we got One Piece, so we always end it off with Witch Watch, so we're going to be going through in that order. At the very end of the video, I'm going to be going through and ranking each of these chapters on what I thought was the best chapter of the week and the worst chapter of the week. So every number between 1 and of course 13, going all the way through there to see what I thought was the best in Jump this week. Along with that, I also like to pick out a MVP or most valuable player, so who I thought was the coolest character this week, either from like an introduction standpoint or just like, oh, I thought they did something cool, right? Or it's really just whatever character I'm like, you know what, I liked you this week, right? But with all of that preliminary stuff out of the way, I just say let's go ahead and get started with One Piece, chapter number 1094. So, of course, One Piece had the cover of the magazine this week, which means it also has that two-color page spread. This one was Zoro and all of the other, whatever Zoro's like family, like Shimotsuki or whatever it is. That whole thing, we all see Ryuma on here. There's a big dragon in the background, and this is a special color page for 103 Mercy's Dragon Damnation, also known as Monsters, which was Oda's like one of his first one shots that he wrote that was widely known as like, oh my gosh, this is great. And later he published Romance Dawn, which was the initial thing that got One Piece into being what it is today. So an anime got announced of it, and at this point I'm recording, the anime actually already came out. It's just a one episode like OVA sort of deal, but it's actually like really good, and the chapter Viz also published it a lot later here too. So like I said, we're at the very end of January, like the beginning of February, and these chapters came out in like mid-October, so yeah, we're trying to fix that slowly but surely, right? This is a cool little card spread with Zoro on it. So to get into the One Piece chapter itself, of course, at the end of last chapter, Vegapunk told all of the pacifistas to attack all of the Navy sailors on the island. So that is what they are now doing. A bunch of people are like, oh man, now the chain of command is broken, what are we going to do, right? All of a sudden, Vegapunk is like, alright, well here's the thing, now that we've changed the pacifistas codes, we need to go and find Bonnie. Sanji is also with Vegapunk in their, like that, Vegapunk 8, or Vega Force 8, whatever it's called, right? But Sanji's there, and he says that his woman radar has found where Bonnie is. So they go down near to where Bonnie is. Bonnie is going around using all of her age powers to de-age and do stuff to a lot of people, right? Eventually, some Navy person, Navy Vice Admiral named Bluegrass comes in. She's like an old lady, and she has the power of the ride fruit. So she gets to turn anybody into like a ride and command them to like ride them. It's an interesting devil fruit power, right? But eventually, Sanji comes over, finds Bonnie, and Vegapunk and everybody else find her too, right? So it's sort of a big deal. At this point, we cut up to the Labo phase, where of course Luffy and Kizaru are doing their big fight. they just keep going back and forth, just fighting. Luffy's, of course, using all of his Toontown powers, while Kizaru's just zapping around at speed of light. And all of a sudden, while they're fighting, something happens, and everybody on the island sort of stops and takes note of what's going on. Like, they feel this force, and we even see that Zoro and Rob Lucci are also feeling it over in their fight. Jinbei's also felt it, and a lot of people are doing it. As all of a sudden, a voice rings out over Egghead just saying, "Pacifistas, stand down." And all the pacifistas start to shut down. And of course, since Vegapunk was the last person to give an order, this means the only person with a higher security clearance than the Vegapunks are the five elders, which means one of the five elders has appeared on the island. As a radio reading comes in from the Navy ship saying that, "Alert to all units on location. Saint Saturn of the Five Elders is disembarking on Egghead." Of course, you know Saturn's been around, but now he's being officially on Egghead. Sanji, while doing his whole thing and trying to protect Bonnie, all of a sudden sees that there's like a summoning circle on the ground of Egghead. And the next thing we know, Saint J. Garcia Saturn rises out from it. Except, he looks a bit different than when we've normally seen him. He's got two devil horns sticking out of his head, and he also looks like a demon spider. He is Saint J. Garcia, a demon spider. Like it is just a freaky design, and hats off to Oda. Like, this is one hell of a design. But yeah, Saint J. Garcia Saturn's here, right? At this point, we cut back over to where Luffy and Kizaru are fighting. Kizaru's just like, "Oh shit." Like, Saint J. Garcia Saturn's on the island. Like, this is really bad. Luffy then uses one of his star gun attacks and sort of like does a punch through Kizaru's head. It like expands out, like, of course, that rubber property he has. But as Kizaru sees this, he's like, "Oh man, I'm seeing stars. I see Saturn down there," right? Luffy also reaches his limit at this point and falls down to the ground, obviously passed out from the toll that Gear 5 has taken on him. As all of a sudden, we see that Saint J. Garcia, or we cut back down to where Saturn is, and we see that he is standing over a Vegapunk on the ground. Vegapunk's like, "Oh, Saint Saturn," right? But Saturn's just like, "Indeed, I thought we already had you killed, Vegapunk," right? And as these two are going through this declaration, all of a sudden, we see Bonnie get out of the clasp or the arms. Bonnie gets out of the grip of Sanji, runs up, grabs a katana, and goes and stabs Saint J. Garcia Saturn in his chest. And that's where we end off this chapter of One Piece. Of course, I'm not a big fan of One Piece in the moment. I really like One Piece a lot more whenever you look from it from the beginning of an arc to the end of an arc. And this is a fine chapter here, just showing like, oh, hey, Saint J. Garcia Saturn has something really, really big going on. Like, this is crazy. And then seeing Bonnie just coming in and stabbing him. Yeah, she's got some courage and resolve. Like, holy crap. So, it's just a little interesting to see this. And I just want to know, where is it going to go next, right? Next up is Undead Unluck, chapter number 178. This chapter is titled "That Wound There." So we start with this chapter, of course, where Rip was in the operating room trying to perform the surgery on Layla when all of a sudden his unrepairability manifested. At the beginning of the chapter, we see Usagi, who is standing in there with him, just sort of like holding him, like sort of holding out a sword to him. He's like, "Hey, you either need to make your choice, either live a quiet life, or cut off your legs and fight along signed us with your new appendages," right? And Rip's just like, "Hey, I told you I'd do it, so I'm not going to like not do it at this point. Like, I'm a man of my word. I'm going to go ahead with this surgery." All of a sudden, Lala speaks up and he's like, "Hey, if you're going to make all this progress, I want to make progress with you too." At this point, we cut back over to where all the Union just gathered in front of Sick. And Sick is sort of standing here, and we learn a little bit of like Sick's whole philosophy, right? He is very into music, and with that, he likes the music of screaming children. And his sort of whole motif is like, he's like a chorus instructor, or I feel like I'm just forgetting words right now. He's a maestro. Is that the word? I think it is, right? The guy who swings around a stick and like points it in direction so people know what to play. Great job. Like, you've got to have like dedication to know all of that perfectly. Like, hats off to you, right? But we're not talking about Gina, who has a hat and undead unluck. We're talking about Sick. So that's sort of his whole thing. And later in the chapter, we get a lot of interesting ideas of, like, him saying, like, my melody is a tune that makes the world go round. Of course, he's talking about sickness. So, yeah, as I said last episode, Sick is a sick fuck, right? So as we just continue on here, all of a sudden, the entire union's in front of him. Sick is sort of saying, like, oh, hey, Fuko, you're weak and everything. And Gina's eventually like, hey, Fuko, you go ahead, like, leave this guy to us. So Fuko starts running out of the group and sort of running towards Sick. And Sick's just like, oh, hey, I guess I should give you all a taste of my medicine. But Fuko just runs past him. And Sick has this moment of like, huh? She ran away? Wasn't she, like, the first of this organization? So at this point, a big battle for the Union commences. We see a lot of interesting attacks as Sick goes, and instead of attacking the unit first, he goes to attack all of the patients in the hospital, right? As all of these, like, screams go on, we see Creed use his undecreased power to sort of fire a bunch of bullets at Sick and force him into a wall. Once he's in this wall, Gina uses an unchanged barrier, and then Billy goes in and shoots his gun in there, and it ricochets off the unchanged barrier against this stone wall and starts hitting Sick a lot, right? At the same time, Gina suddenly lets down a barrier. Phil comes in and fires a laser at it, right? So they are doing a lot of damage to Sick, or so it seems, because Sick comes out of this whole attack totally unscathed, right? And the next thing he does is suddenly point out, like, he's got one of those conductor wand things I was talking about earlier, and he points it at a lot of these people, and it just, like, extends out and pierces every single member of Union. As the way Sick describes it is that he has planted seeds inside of all of the members of the Union, and they will all become sound and sickness that will be breeding inside of them. So, of course, they're like sick seeds that go inside people, and they're just making them, like, be sick, so then make the melody that Sick wants to hear. It's a very interesting use of the power of Sick, and especially combining that with the musical aspect. Eventually, Sick's just like, hey, this Gina girl is the one who, like, fucked me over the most here. So he walks over, sort of, like, picks her up, right? And as he's just looking at this, like, oh, man, I'm gonna, like, steal your soul or whatever. It's a little weird, right? But Gina just says, like, hey, your melody here just stinks, and you need to get your hearing checked, right? And Sick's just like, oh, man, yeah, I don't want to hear all of this, right? So as he's finally here, we see that Unavoidable and all of the other members of the Union get back up and get ready for a second attack, as all of a sudden Sick just, like, starts to go on something. He's just like, hey, I am the fundamental rule of this world. Ah, God, I truly am the one and only rule that makes this world turn so beautiful. As Sick actually has his hand on Gina's soul and is pulling it out of her body, when all of a sudden he just gets shot, right? And of course, this is Fuko, who fired her bad bullet number 50 at him. And Gina's just like, oh man, here comes a stroke of unluck, right? And of course, Sick's just like, all right, what's going on here, right? As all of a sudden, we see that Rip is out of the operating room, right? But Lala's also staying beside him. They're sort of talking back and forth, as of course, Rip is walking with the Blade Runner artifact on. And as him and Lala sort of walk onto the scene, we see that actually both of them lost a leg. Rip isn't the only one who lost a leg here. Lotlo lost one too, so the two of them both put on the Blade Runner artifact together and fired off one of the Blade Runner attacks that goes through and cuts Sick's other arm off. Of course, it's unrepair, so Sick isn't doing too good after this, right? But the big reveal of the chapter is that both Rip and Lotla have taken on the burden of unrepair. And as Rip sort of says there, he's like, that wound right there, it won't repair itself till I die. And of course, Lotla had the themed lines here because Rip was forgetting what he was saying. This is honestly a really crazy turn of events, in my opinion. I do really like Sick's whole motif of, like, the melodies and the song of sadness and how it's just so much joy to his ears. It's a very interesting philosophy to hear, and, get it here? Good old puns, right? But then at the same time, suddenly seeing Rip come in, and, of course, Unfortunate, who is Layla, has also helped him out, right? It's just, like, so random that they're doing this together. But I just love it. Like, it's such an awesome moment. So, that's Undead Unluck this week. So, moving on to DJ Nose's Family Deadly Sins, chapter number 44. There really isn't a whole lot to cover in this chapter. So, pretty much at the beginning, we learned that Tsubasa has found out that Sota has sort of reverted back, and he has forgotten himself to the dream and no longer remembers what was going on before. And Tsubasa's trying to like confront him about it and talk all of this talk, right? As we see that him and his family are all sitting around a dinner table, dad excluded. It's just the other of the six family members, right? And as they're all sitting there, we see that Soda is just interacting perfectly, right? And Tsubasa doesn't really like the sound of this, and about halfway through the chapter, he just starts to say, like, hey, guys, this is a mess. Mom's gonna start arguing, Shori's gonna start acting up back, and Grandpa's gonna go off and do his thing, and Grandma's not gonna care about anybody but Grandpa, and Shori's gonna do her own thing, right? Nothing matters, like, and in the end, he even grabs out a camera, and he, like, slams on the ground, it's like, in the end, nobody even cares what's gonna happen to this family, right? It's just gonna continue again, and we're gonna wanna forget everything again, like, what is the point of this? So then Tsubasa actually, while they're sitting at the table, grabs a table and spills everything off it like his mom did many chapters earlier, right? And to this, everybody sort of just acts shocked, right? And Tsubasa pretty much just says the whole thing of like, hey, don't forget, no matter what's happening now, no matter how hard we try, it will just end up the same. Like, why are we doing this? We want to look for how we are, right? And eventually, Shiori looks over at Tsubasa, and of course, it's this whole time seemed like Shiori may have something going on to where she realizes the dream that they're in, but she just wants everybody to be happy, and especially Soda to be happy, who it seems like she just really cares for his well-being. So, seeing that Soda is actually happier, she wants to keep up status quo. But seeing Tsubasa do this, she just looks and says, like, oh yeah, Tsubasa, he was actually the only one who always kept looking straight ahead no matter what happened, right? As Tsubasa storms out of the room while the table's all in dismay and Soda's looking over his broken camera once again, and Tsubasa just walks out of the room and says, hey, I'm gonna go talk to Dad. So next week will obviously be a big confrontation going on here, so I am sort of excited to see it, and as much as I said like a nothing chapter this is, I do really like the message that Tsubasa is getting across here. Like, hey, why are we even trying to do this if we know the outcome's going to be the same? He's like, we've done this how many times now? And it's always been the same, so why are we trying at this point? And it sort of reminds me of, like, that whole detail of madness, right? How madness is doing the same exact thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. And that's sort of what the Ichinose's family is doing right now, so it's just very interesting to see, and I do like Tsubasa's whole thing at the end. It's like, hey, I'm gonna go talk to Dad, so confrontation next chapter. I'm actually sort of excited for it, right? But going into another very exciting chapter, we've got Martial Master Sumi, chapter number 16. This chapter is titled, Sow Your Seeds. I don't know if I actually read out the Ichinose Family Deadly Sins title. Did I? I don't know. It's chapter 44, Tsubasa's Cry, if I did, right? But hey, this is Martial Master Sumi. Of course, Nito is getting ready to start the second of the 3-minute matches with, of course, our guy Sakura. Ooh, what was his name? Was it just Kinjo Sakura? Yeah, I think it was just Sakura, so I'm gonna call him Kinjo anyway, but yeah. So pretty much, it's Kinjo versus Nito, round 2, as they get ready to fight. There's a little bit of talk between Yoshitoki and Nito in the beginning, with pretty much Yoshitoki just telling Nito, like, hey, watch out for your opponents, don't let get into a slugfest, right? So that's sort of how it starts. Nito and Kinjo get into the ring and start getting ready to duke it out. Nito goes in with the initiative, goes and lands a roundhouse kick on Kinjo's side. Kinjo seems a little bit weakened in this, as Nito starts to think, like, alright, if Kinjo was sort of flinching from that, he'll definitely fall for a feint if I do one. So he goes over to do a feint, and he, like, goes in to start punching up high, but then leans down in for a full-on tackle on his leg to try to get Kinjo onto the ground. Kinjo sees this and grabs Nito's head and forces him into the ground. This is actually a martial art technique known as sprawling, and Nito sort of makes the whole idea of, like, oh, hey, how is this guy, like, keeping me down and, like, doing this move when he doesn't even know a single thing about martial arts? And the whole thing is, like, oh, Kinjo's actually growing over the experience of these two matches, right? At this point, Nito gets up after Kinjo just did the sprawling technique on him, but Kinjo comes in with a nasty left hook and comes in and just punches Nito in the face, right? And Nito's just like, oh man, he just hit me. That means if he did that, he's probably coming in with a right kick now. So, but he starts to get up and like get into a blocking stance. But of course, Kinjo, who doesn't really know what's going on here, doesn't do this. Instead, he doesn't go for the obvious move, and instead does a Russian hook in the side of Nito's face, sort of, again, dealing a not-so-great blow to Nito, right? We get a little bit of a description of what a Russian hook is, and Nito's like, okay, first he was sprawling, and now he's performing a Russian hook? Like, this wasn't something that he was actively taught. He's like, he's just doing what he thinks he feels right in the moment. He's like, these are like instincts of a honed street fighter in the ring, right? So at this point, Kinjo sort of gets up and he starts to talk to who's his face, Nito, and he's like, hey, I've fought so many people and there's nobody in the outside world that would fight me. Everybody just knows how strong I am. And he's like, so I came to the underground so I could keep fighting strong opponents. And he's like, because a fight is a conversation with Fist, he's like, I want to know who you really are, so I'll show you who I really am, right? And he's like, let's teach each other who we are through a conversation with our fist, right? Nito sort of sees this and he's just like, all right, that was honestly a shallow blow there, but it still really hurt. So all of a sudden, Nito's sort of standing here. Yoshitoki gives him a bit more advice. He's like, hey, make sure to sway next time whenever he uses that punch. He's like, you'll see coming from his big broad shoulder. And he's like, circle him and the ring's big, so use it, Nito, right? So he sort of gives all this advice to Nito as Kinjo starts running in with, it looks like, another punch, right? And he actually does that. And Nito, like, all of a sudden dodges out of the way, right? And Kinjo sort of makes note of how this is. As Nito all of a sudden gets up and does a roundhouse kick on Kinjo. Except Kinjo actually sees it and blocks it with one of his elbows, right? And Nito makes a note of, like, oh crap, that hurt my foot, but that must have hurt his elbow way worse. As all of a sudden Kinjo's just like, hey, I won't let you trick me again if any of that. As Nito starts thinking, like, all right, this guy is built on street fighting. And he's just like, but it seems like his instincts are about to kick into an overdrive since he's facing such a strong foe. So at this point, all of a sudden Kinjo comes in with another punch, but Nito dodges out of the way. And at this point we cut over to Kazuro's point of view, where he's watching the match. And, of course, the lady who's sitting there with Kazuro, I just forgot her name at this point, sort of makes a note of, like, oh, hey, Nito's actually really good at evading, right? And Kazuro says that, yes, he very much is. And he's like, he even evaded my attacks. And this probably got to do with something with our Nito family style, of course, what his grandfather has taught him over the years. Very interesting. At this point, we see that Yoshitoki yells up to Nito, saying that there has been 1 minute on the clock, so they've wasted 2 minutes so far, so it's time that Nito has to go in to win this, right? And as this just keeps going on, Nito starts to crouch down, and he gets ready for a flying kick, pretty much, right? But Kinjo can't really tell this since he doesn't know all the tells of martial arts, and goes in for another punch, as all of a sudden, Nito gets up and performs a flying kick when Kinjo least expects it, and, or flying knee, my bad, I think I called it a flying kick twice, but no, it is a flying knee, and everybody in the gym is like, oh my gosh, what is this, right? And this has clearly staggered Kinjo, as he's just like, oh, what was going on there? And at this point, Yoshitoki sort of starts to think a little bit, and he's just like, hey, after you learned the dangers of what Kinjo can do in round one, you thought about how to use it to your suit, or how to take it in yourself and figure out a strategy against him. It may be due to your family's martial arts training, but you've unbelievably adept in with your analysis and response to a fight. He says, Nito, your weapon is a high fighting IQ. As of course, Kinjo is all here just like woozy around as Nito's just like, hey, I refuse to take a knee. And he's just like, I'm going to do this how I'm going to do it. And he goes and he performs a standing ninja choke on Kinjo, and he's pretty much the whole thing is like he plans to choke him out while he's still up. And of course, since who's his face, Kinjo won't tap out, this is the perfect way to show Nito is in full control. I really do think this is a great chapter, sort of showing Nito's fighting prowess. Of course, I'm not into MMA or anything like that, so all of these like moves don't have an effect on me like it would on somebody who's actually very much interested in it. Like, I don't get the significance behind a standing ninja choke. It looks really powerful, but I actually don't know all this stuff, so it sort of brings it down in that sort of way. But this is just still an amazing chapter, just showing this second round between Kinjo and Nito, and showing sort of Nito's big move with that high fighting IQ. So I really like that, and think it's really interesting to see. And with Martial Master Sumi out of the way, that means we all know what time it is. It's time for the Mama UU Speed Round. Of course, this is the segment I like to do here on the Weekly Shonen Jump Talkabouts, where I talk about Mama UU, but I see how fast I can do it. Now, a little caveat to this week's, I actually think this is a very good chapter, so I'm not going to speed through it as fast as I like to normally speed through them, but let's just go ahead and get started. And all right, let's get like the neck all cranked, let's do some voice exercises, and hey, let's get ready. All right. So let's get started with the Mama UU Speed Round. All right, this is chapter number 5, titled I Have Nothing to Live For. We start the chapter with an image of the woman who we met last time, who is Alyssa Whirlpool. I'm going to call her Whirlpool because that's just funnier, right? And all of a sudden, she is running away from Corleo because, of course, Corleo freaked out from, oh, I don't know ladies, so I'm going to scream whenever I touch one, right? That was the whole thing last time, right? And we get a little bit of a joke here about how Alyssa does not know all the intricacies, of this world, because Corleo is sort of like, hey, oh no, there's a red light up there and you're crossing a crosswalk. That means you're going to die. And Alyssa sort of walks back to him, right? So Corleo and Alyssa sort of sit down for a second. Corleo calls the central HQ and pretty much tells them where two of them are. The two of them are sort of sitting down. Corleo introduced himself, says that he is Corleo, he's 18 years old, and he's like, oh, I've actually met a hero from another world before, right? Alyssa fully introduces herself, and the two of them just sort of start talking. Alyssa sort of makes a little bit of note of like, hey, I'm really weak around here, and she's like, I've decided to run because I'm so weak. And she's like, I've been running for the past 24 years. I was actually running with my mom, right? And the two of them are sitting together. Alyssa eventually turns over to Corleo and is like, hey, can I tell you something? And Corleo's like, yeah, shoot, you can. So Alyssa just says like, hey, if you see here, my mom died, but before my mom died, she told me to live. But my mom was the only person I had at the time, so she's like, so I have nothing to live for anymore, so what should I do now? And she asked that to Corleo, who of course was asking that same exact question to himself not too long ago. The two of them just sort of talk a little bit too. Corleo relates the story of his mother figure in Mamama, how whenever she got hurt, Corleo thought to himself that he wants to get strong because he is so very weak, right? All of a sudden, Corleo's like, hey, we should go to the park's entrance to be able to meet up with everybody as they come by to pick us up, right? So as Corleo and Alyssa start to get up, we see that there is a man sitting in between them who Corleo and Alyssa don't actually notice, right? As Corleo and Alyssa are walking back, they sort of make a little note of like, hey, what's all this sigil sorcery about? And Alyssa says that she actually knows what it is, and Corleo's just like, okay, that's a little weird. But all of a sudden, this man sitting on the bench snaps his fingers, and all of a sudden there is a light post behind a bench, which I didn't mention earlier, but all of a sudden one of the one-eyed creatures starts growing from it, right? And it all of a sudden goes down to the ground and does a dive towards both Corleo and Alyssa. Of course, Corleo picks up Alyssa and sort of runs out of the way as the creature goes and bites into a tree behind it, right? Alyssa's sort of like, oh no, what's going on here, right? But Corleo eventually sets her down and is like, hey, Alyssa, can you run all the way to the entrance? He's like, I'm going to kick this thing's butt. But she's like, hey, but what about you, Corleo, right? At this point, Alyssa sort of just looks up to Corleo and is like, hey, maybe I could live for this guy, right? It's a little bit of like that sort of thing. And she's like, man, this guy's hand is very much shivering. He's like, it's just like my mom's hand. That same sort of scaredness, right? As all of a sudden, Alyssa looks up to Corleo and just says, thank you, as the one-eyed creature gets up into the ground and, or jumps up from where it was and burrows deep into the ground. Alyssa sees that and like, oh no, it burrowed, right? But Alyssa uses some of her sigil sorcery, and she uses a technique called sigil sorcery, go, go, Re-ki, fortify force, and pretty much punches the ground with some super strength power. The creature flies upright as Alyssa's like, hey, Corleo, gotta go do it now. As what Corleo does is uses his sigil sorcery, and he asks Alyssa how. Alyssa says, like, it relies on emotions. And Corleo just says, like, lend me your strength, Evan, as he all of a sudden jumps, and he jumps very, very high into the ground, goes, and the creature opens up, like, a big mouth to swallow Corleo, but Corleo dodges out of the way and grabs the creature's tail, and in grabbing it, he looks over to the light post and swings it down on the light post, pretty much puncturing it and killing it at this instant. But then Corleo realizes, oh no, he has to land on the ground. He's like, oh no, I can't even levitate anymore, as he realizes that all of his sigil sorcery, as they get called later, stalks are gone, as Alyssa ends up catching him, and just like, hey, thank goodness I made it in time to catch you. He's like, you must have all used all of your sigil stock up, and Corleo's like, stock, but then thinks that, like, hey, ever since he met Panaleo, he really hasn't had a moment's rest, and all these times he's used the sigil sorcery since then, he is pretty much running on a tank on empty. Corleo's almost passing out now in Alyssa's arms, so Alyssa looks down to Corleo, and she just says, hey, will you be what I look for? And Corleo sort of not, like, recognizing what she's saying, just says, like, sure. And that's where we end this chapter. I know that was a bit of like a lighter Mommy U speed around today, but still very good nonetheless. And I actually really did like this chapter, sort of meeting Alyssa and seeing Corleo sort of use some of his sigil sorcery and actually take down one of these beasts that he was having so much trouble with before. And also a mystery of, hey, who is this guy who is sitting in between him on the bench, right? It's just a little bit of a interesting question, so one that I'm also very eager to see the answer to. And with that, we're moving on to Kagurabachi chapter number 4. This chapter is titled Sorcery and the Enchanted Blades. So we start off this chapter, of course, with the Daruma wielding exploding sorcerer guy who, for the simplicity of it, I'm just going to call Daruma, right? Not like that one Samurai 8 character, right? We want to forget that series. I actually never read it, but I watched a lot of, like, reviews and reactions of people who did, and, oh man, I need to check, like, that stupid series out someday. Like, Musashi Kishimoto had the highs of Naruto and, like, the lows of Samurai 8, but hey, we're talking about Jump's favorite series, Kagurabachi, right now. So, pretty much we see that Chiro is outside of the big, whatever him and Char were eating last time, with the Daruma guy standing outside it. Pretty much Chiro takes out his blade and uses the Intin move to go and cut Char free from the grips of Daruma here. Char flies out of the way, and as she's doing this, she looks like she's going to hit the ground, as Chiro calls for Mr. Shiba, who all of a sudden appears out of nowhere with what I'm seeming to be is his teleportation ability. At least that's what it seems like right now. And Shiba comes in and grabs Char out of the middle of nowhere, right? And all of a sudden, Daruma looks at it, it's like, oh crap, he's like, another sorcerer's here. But as he goes to make an attack towards Char and Shiba, they've already disappeared again. And now Shiba and Char are sitting in Mr. Shiba's car, right? And at this point, we see that Mr. Shiba sort of starts to describe what sorcery is to Char, as Char's just like, hey, can I learn sorcery? And he's like, you can. He pretty much says that sorcery comes from the spirit energy He says, the spirit energy that powers sorcery is basically a life force. It slumbers within any human. He says that spirit energy can be used by anyone for sorcery, right? You just have to find out a good way to unlock it, right? So sort of like your typical, hey, special powers-based series. It's not bad by any means, but it's just something we've seen so much of. It's just hard to find an original take on it, right? That's just my thought there. Daruma's really freaking out here, so Chihiro comes out, pulls out his blade, and has the black goldfish that swarms out from inside of it. Char takes note of this, and sees like, oh, a goldfish, and Chiba pretty much explains it. Sometimes swords have sorcery imbued in them, and Chihiro's father, Konshigeru Kuhara, made a bunch of these blades. At the same time, Daruma sort of realizes what's going on. He's like, hey, he doesn't create objects or spirit energy outside his body for use of the sword. The sword has spirit energy itself, and thus it is enchanted blade, right? And We see specifically that Daruma says, so there is another one out there, which sort of says that he knows the existence of another one and possibly where one might be, right? Chihiro sort of notices, he's like, another one? What are you talking about now, right? But as Daruma starts to throw out more of his Russian Daruma balls out, Chihiro comes over and just like yells like, hey, who's your boss? Tell me these answers now. But Daruma sort of doesn't give him the light of day. They sort of go back and forth a little bit until we see that Daruma sort of tries to hit a chord on Char. And he says, like, hey, you little brats, quit giving me trouble. And he's just like, hey, see this guy here is trying to protect you. He's going to die like everybody else who's died trying to protect you, just like your mother did. This sort of resonates with Char a little bit. And both Shiba and Chihiro sort of takes in, like, oh, man, this is a little messed up, right? Shiba just says, like, hey, I don't exactly know what happened. And he puts a hand on Char, but just says, hey, sit tight. Chihiro will take care of his force. You don't have to worry about that. Daruma continues on with all of this narrative of, oh man, your mother's miserable death and everything, just creating more explosions as all of a sudden, Chihiro gets up close to Daruma and uses an ability called Red, which seems to produce flames up from the ground with a sort of burning goldfish, right? So, pretty much, he also uses the black ability after that, and jumps up right next to Daruma, and Daruma barely dodges out of the way. At this point, Daruma comes up and sort of gets right next to Chihiro, and he sort of uses the same whip thing that he used to capture Char earlier, and wraps it around Chihiro, with Chihiro not facing Daruma, and uses one of his Daruma things to aim at Chihiro's back to pretty much explode him, right? But we see that Chihiro is still holding his sword, and he's got it facing back towards Daruma, where Chihiro uses Red Invincible, right? And Daruma's just like, oh crap, right? As Shiba sort of starts to explain a little bit, he just says that the power of Red isn't just for defense. He says, it absorbs and seizes ownership. So he's like, nay, now do you understand why I wanted you to sit tight? Chihiro is really powerful, right? At this point, we see that, yes, Daruma is defeated, so Shiba drives up the car, and Char sort of says a little few things to Chihiro. It's honestly a bit of a cute moment, right? And pretty much Chihiro says that, hey, he's going to help out, and he's going to protect Char. Char is really happy about this, but Chihiro then turns around to where Daruma is laying, not dead, he's just, like, laying on the side of a building. He's just like, hey, I've got three questions for you, Daruma, and he sort of picks up and is like, hey, first off, who is your boss? And he's like, second off, what do you want of Char? And he's like, third, where is the Enchanted Blade Cloud Gouger? As that's where we end off the chapter with Chihiro sort of trying to, intimidate and get information out of, or interview, why can I not think of words whenever I'm trying to record? Like, I read these chapters earlier with, like, the perfect script of what I wanted to say, and then when I go sit down and record, I legitimately forget every single little part of that. I just don't know what's up with that, right? But I actually really like this chapter, sort of seeing Chihiro go through and sort of showing off his ability, and as much as everybody likes the meme on Kagurabachi, I actually am really liking this, right? Especially this chapter, sort of seeing the cool move that Chihiro does. I'm not mad at Kagurabachi at all. I'm actually sort of excited for it, right? Next up is Two on Ice Chapter 3, titled Alongside Each Other. Pretty much this chapter has more things with Hayuma, which is our main guy, and whoever the main female is. I'm forgetting her name right now, but as we know, I'm recording these videos very, very far in the future, and I have not been keeping up with Two on Ice, because normally in Shonen Jump, I give each series three chapters, like how they used to do for Shonen Jump in a day, sort of with that whole jumpstart idea, and if a series hasn't captured me in the first three chapters, I actually drop it, and Two on Ice was a series that I actually dropped, so I'm not going to be continuing reading this, so at this point, there's really just no reason for me to go over what happens in this chapter, but from what I remember about it, it was a fine enough chapter, but ice skating is really not my thing, and this type of sports manga really isn't either, so not really too much for me else to say about Two on Ice, so that's probably the shortest segment I've ever done, but with that, we are going to move on to Kill Blue Chapter Number 24. This chapter is titled Stark Raving Norin. Random chapter title, but I definitely do like where this chapter starts off. Of course, last time we had the whole, like, terrorist attack with Jarden arc going on, where Tenma and Otogami had to rescue Norin from the clutches of the Rindo brothers. So we sort of start off this chapter with a little bit of narration, just saying, like, hey, regarding the incident that happened yesterday in which a mysterious explosion severely damaged the National Stadium, the chairman of the stadium, Mr. Morio Kawada of Gosamu, has officially designated, a crime group who attacked it, and he pretty much says, like, he is, pledged to donate a lot to cover all the costs, right? Sort of saying that, like, and it sort of seems that Rindo hypnotized him to be able to do this, right? That's the whole idea here. We see an image as Tenma is walking to school, Kappo is walking beside him, and the two of them are sort of talking to each other. We see the lie that Otogami and Tenma came up with, which is pretty much that the people who kidnapped Norin stopped at a park and left their van to go out and play catch. And during that time, Tenma and Otogami broke into the van and got Norin back, right? Kappo can sort of see through the bullshit lie, but doesn't really call him on it. As Tenma makes a joke here, just like, hey, it's weird how crazy you are about me, right? But Kappo's just like, hey, I don't care that much. At this point, we get into one of the weirder parts of the chapters. Of course, Otogami is trying to not be near Norin, who, of course, Norin is very lovesick for Otogami right now due to Kazuma's hypnosis, right? I'm not really going to be talking about most of the jokes because they're really stupid. Of course, Otogami's master, who is actually Kappo's younger brother, who has got his sister complex, says something to Otogami like, oh man, you took my sister on a date with Tenma Tendo? Like, I don't understand. Like, Tenma's just, like, such a stand-up guy. Like, how could you be mad at him? But it's this little thing back and forth. Eventually, though, we cut over to where... Nekoda, who, of course, is, like, Otogami's handler guy, is sitting with, of course, Otogami's wife. And they're sort of shooting the shit, talking back and forth. And eventually, there's a big deal about, hey, Otogami turned back into his actual, like, hitman self, his regularly aged, not in a high schooler's body self. And this is a really big deal because he turned back, which means that the wasp that's summoning that, whatever that DNA virus, is still within his body. But if Jarden had something to do with kidnapping Norin and doing some stuff like that, they're like, hey... I lost my total train of thought there. They're pretty much saying that Jarden may have answers to how to cure Otogami in the long run, right? Eventually, we cut back over to all these school antics where Otogami is just trying to dodge Norin and everything. And pretty much just to end out the chapter, there's a lot of more jokes as Otogami's just running away. And Otogami's eventually standing in the lot having jumped off like the balcony to dodge Norin. But as Norin runs down, she grabs, like, a school sign off the ground, grabs a broom handle, and pretty much makes a paraglider to fall down to the ground. And the whole joke is that she looks really cool while doing it. But her whole thing is like, oh, hey, I really love you right now, Otogami. So, hey, I challenge you to a duel. If I can catch you, you have to be my boyfriend for real this time, right? And, of course, Otogami's freaking out, and he's just like, hey, how does she look cooler than a hitman doing that? But he's like, still... why did this have to happen? Like, what the hell, Norin, right? And that's where we end off the chapter. I normally like talking about Kill Blue, because I genuinely do think it's a really fun series at times, but I'm just not a fan of the whole, like, whenever Norin is into Otogami, like, Otogami, so one reason my series sort of works is that Otogami has that strict thing of, like, hey, I understand when this is a problem, and I don't really want anything to do with it, but whenever Norin is like that, it sort of just plays off those jokes, and I'm not really a big fan of it, so... not really a whole lot to cover when the jokes just really aren't that funny either, right? Well, if you want to talk about another series that isn't that funny, well, we've got Nue's Exorcist chapter number 21. This chapter is titled About Nue. Pretty much Nue broke out a second hollow weapon last time. Oh my gosh. Pretty much Nue broke out a second hollow weapon last time, and we see the beginning of this chapter... this hollow weapon has completely devastated Master Moro here. We pretty much get a little bit into Master Moro's head, what he was planning to do here. Pretty much he knows that the boss, or the Lord, is looking at the battle through Shiroha's eyes. So he sort of wanted to last out to let the Lord see what's going on with Nue to possibly send reinforcements after her and learn a bit of data. But Master Moro is just like, hey, that's what I thought I could do, but it actually didn't work that way. As Moro just gets totally defeated, right? all of a sudden, we just do a smash cut inside of school, where Nue is back in her, like, medium form, and all of a sudden, Morioki's also in there, tied up to a chair. It's just so stupid, and Nui's just like, oh, hey, with that, we've gained a new comrade. It's Morioki Fujino, right? And she sort of just presents him. And Gakuro's like, so we have a prisoner of war here now? And Gakuro actually makes a smart deduction of, hey, isn't this guy extremely dangerous? But Nui's like, hey, it's fine. As we see that Moro just says, like, hey, even though I use a summoning pin to trade off for summoning that Ringo Shikigami, is that I am not able to fight for about a month. I'm guessing that a spirit energy just gets, like, consumed, so he can't summon a hollow weapon. I guess that's what it is. It makes no goddamn sense, though, right? But at the same time, Moro just says, like, hey, I've got to comply with all of your demands then. But Nue then just says that she can't use her hollow weapon either for a while, so it's sort of like that, they're at a stalemate. Nue then just goes in, like, a whole explanation just saying, like, hey, I can't fight anymore because of this, and Gakuro's so weak, I was using, like, a spirit amplifier device to keep up my power, but I used too much and I broke it, so now I can't fight until Gakuro gets stronger, right? Suddenly, she also has a whiteboard behind her, and she starts growing things, and, like, does, like, a tap analogy between Gakuro and, like, powers of spirit energy, and pretty much just says that she used too much spirit power, and thus broke her device that made her stronger, so now she needs Gakuro to be stronger to be able to fight well. It's just so mind-numbingly stupid. Like, holy shit. This is just bad, right? Morioki then just makes a note of, like, oh, hey, I was actually really close to beating Nue then. If only I had lasted a bit much longer, I may have been able to do it, right? And all of a sudden, oh, who's it say? Morioki just looks over to Gakuro and is like, hey, do you know who Nue actually is? And Gakuro's like, no, I don't. But Morioki then explains that she is one of the six sealed spirit ancestors called a Hyo, who are the most powerful spirits in existence. And she is the person who is spawning all of these possible spirits around a school. And that's why there's so many spirits at school. It's actually a sort of interesting concept that she is so powerful that she's producing spirits, and she actually doesn't want to all these spirits go around, so you pick Gakuro as a medium, right? So Morioki's just like, hey, Gakuro, Nue, who you are helping, is one of the Hyo, and is one of the worst spirits in all of mankind, and he's just like, hey, you being aligned with her pits you against every other exorcist sort of in the world, so we're all going to be coming after you, right? And Morioki then sort of says, like, hey, Gakuro, I can tell from your face that you want to help people, and maybe you didn't actually know the truth about Nue. So he's like, hey, if you don't want to help Nue anymore, you don't have to. We in the Fujino family can, like, accept you in and all of that. But then Gakuro has a determined look on his face as Nue just looks at him and says, hey, you said everything right, Moro. And she just says, well, let me talk about my goal. Then we end the chapter. This was stupid, like, the chapter sort of just happening at the beginning is like, okay, then why not? And then, like, or the battle ending. I said the chapter beginning. The battle ends, so it's like, okay, I thought we were going to get a little bit more. And then there's just so much dialogue and stupid jokes and stuff. I don't understand how this series has popped off as hard as it has. Like, it's just crazy, in my opinion, right? That's where we end up the chapter. There's nothing I can even say to, like, oh man, I'm excited for next chapter because I'm just genuinely not, like, excited at all about it, right? But next up is Akane Banashi, chapter number 81, titled Chocho Konjakute, the Okubon Part 2. Hey, it's part 2 to last chapter, right? We have actually a Halloween cover page spread at the end of this chapter. I really like it because I think Halloween's sort of cool. It's not my favorite holiday out there. I'm not, like, a big Halloween buff like some guys, but or gals. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be, like, sexist or anything here. Like, that's Nue's exorcist job. Like, not mine, right? But it is a cool, like, Halloween-themed spread. Of course, this chapter came out in October, so it is fair to talk about that. Not in the middle of a snowman January season. Oops. Right. We started this chapter with a little bit of an interesting note about Chocho, pretty much to establish how much of a gambler he is. It is pretty much talking about a online mahjong tournament where there were a bunch of pros playing, but then Chocho was also there playing with them. And Chocho acquired a hand that had a percentage of 0.03% of actually like getting that hand. It's just really, really rare, and it had a lot of points, and it pretty much made Chocho win this event over the country's top players, sort of showing like, hey, this is a Rakugo guy. This is really weird, right? And there's a little bit of like a post interview about it, and one of these guys just is like, hey, Chocho is able to read his audience, but he also does interesting reads himself, right? It's hard to get a read on Chocho. That's the whole point. Of course, Chocho is starting off to tell his Rakugo story in the present, and Akane, Hasho, and all the other Zinza and everybody else there at the Rakugo place are all paying attention to Chocho, right? As Chocho sort of starts to talk, and he just starts to go off the cuff a little bit. He's like, hey, how's everybody doing? He's like, I thought I'd do a little bit of gambling with Zinza backstage earlier, but don't worry, it was all for a fundraiser. He's like, and just when you're able to start gambling, all of a sudden I got called up here to do my set. And he's like, well, I guess that's what it is. But after he says that, he suddenly jumps in and just says, like, hey, there's said to be... At this point, after he finishes that, like, there is no break. Chocho just jumps into his stories. He just says, like, hey, there are said to be three great pleasures in life. One of them is to gamble, and this pastime has more than a few enthusiasts. And as he starts to tell a story, Hasho, who of course is sitting next to Akane, sort of says, like, hey, Chocho just floated into that story, didn't he? And he sort of says, like, hey, Chocho, his voice is very crisp and bright, and his enunciation is very firm. He's like, his nin is impatient but good spirit. And he says, his words and deeds go hand in hand. He's like, he says, everything he says passes through one ear and goes straight out and straight to the gut. And he's like, that is a quality that any Rakugoko would envy to have, right? And Akane's just like, yeah, he actually, it's very easy to listen to his story, right? As she's like, the whole crowd just seems subdued by hearing him talk for like a second, right? And then Hasho says, well, that's probably an issue with the choice of the story. As we see that the story that Chocho has decided to say or recite or Rakugo is called One for Show, as it is about a retiree who was once known as a master gambler, is invited by younger men to play a game of Chobochi, which is of course is the game that Chocho wanted to play with Akane last chapter. And we see that it is a game where the roll of the dice leads to delight and agony alike. And it's just a Rakugo story, right? Hasho pretty much goes on a little bit of just a speech about, like, hey, normally how the time slots work is there's a lot of 15-minute time slots, which are meant for, like, more lighthearted stories, and then the 30-minute time slot, which is what Chocho's performing in, is normally meant for bigger stories that sort of have more emotional weight to them, right? But what Chocho picked here was actually one of these sort of, like, middle-tier downer stories that you normally find in a 15-minute category, right? And it kind of's like, so why did he actually choose this story? But Hasho says it's a bad habit of Chocho's. And Hasho's like, hey, was Chocho playing dice before he came out here? And Akane's just like, yeah, he was. So Hasho just says that he decides which story to perform based on the dice roll, right? And Hasho's just like, yeah, it's unthinkable. He's a fucking mad lad, right? But he pretty much says, like, hey, that is where it differs from gambling, right? Chocho is so much into gambling that he's even willing to gamble his career on it. At this point, we get more into where Chocho is actually talking, or is doing the Rakugo in front of the audience. We pretty much see that this is supposed to be a senile old man who is the pro gambler here. And he pretty much says to all the young guys, like, hey, I am going to roll a dice underneath this cup. You guys have to pick whatever it's going to land on, right? And he puts the cup down, but he actually doesn't put the dice under it, right? Even though he rolled it, right? And we see that all the people are like, hey, is he going senile? We can already see what he rolled. He rolled a one here, right? And at this point, Chocho just looks out to the audience, and he's just like, oh, hey, now all of you, I want you guys to place your bets. Obviously acting as the old senile guy, and it's just like, poet's being like, oh, hey, I bet you put money on one, I bet you put money on one. And does this, and sort of really gets the audience involved, right? as Akane takes a note of, man, Chocho's actually shifted the dynamic in this room very massively. It's very interesting to see, right? As Chocho eventually points to a lot of people and is like, all right, I think that's it. I think that's all. He's like, you all want to bet on the number one, don't you, right? As we pretty much see that the whole point of Chocho's Rakugo is that he wants to put the crowd on the edge of their seats, right? As we cut back over to Rakugo's story, where Chocho is now back in character. He's just like, all right, that's perfect. I'm so upset that I didn't get the role. And he's like, whoops, that wasn't me. He's like, all right. But I like how you guys make things interesting. If the die underneath this cup isn't anything but a one, then I win. He's like, time to figure out who flavors Lady Luck. So he pulls up the cup, say, let's see who wins. But then he goes and grabs the dice out to the side, just saying like, hey, that's after I put the one out for show, of course, right? And then he rolls the whole thing. He's like, hey, I told you to guess the roll that was under the cup, didn't I? The whole audience just busts out into laughing, right? As Hasho just says like, hey, Chocho's performances never miss. He's like, he's got the best read on the audience of anybody in the entire Rakugo world. And his boldness to be able to seize the attention of the crowd in one swift motion like that, he says, he is a born gambler, both on the stage and off. And at this point, we just get a full double page spread of the natural gambler, Chocho Kan Jakute, as we see that in this image, he is holding a cup and a dice, obviously signifying the story he is telling. This is a hilarious chapter. I know I didn't do the best of describing your Rakugo story as it was going on. And normally with Rakugo stories, I just like to give like the main point across. But this is such a fun one where we see into Chocho's mind. I had just to talk all the way about it because it's just so fun to see, right? I just really don't know what to say. Chocho looked really cool. And of course, Hasho sort of giving all that narration like, yeah, Chocho loves gambling, so he's even willing to gamble his career here. It's honestly a really funny and interesting dynamic to see, and Chocho just looks so cool, man. And with that, next up is Blue Box, chapter number 120. This chapter is titled Outrageous. Now, of course, we get a cover page this chapter too, right? It's like a Kana Banashi cover page, Blue Box cover page. And this cover page, I actually really like it because it's one of those that's meant to be looked at on its side in sort of that landscape style. But it has all of our main characters on it of Taiki, Hina, Kyo, Chinatsu, Haru, Ayame, and Karin on it, right? Really all the big important characters in the series. And I actually really do like this cover page, right? But as we get into the actual chapter itself, we see it is now April. We skipped a whole 2 months since, of course, last time it was Valentine's Day. But we see that today is school started back up. All of our main casts, like Taiki, Hina, and Kyo, are all in their second year now. And with that, they're new freshmen in the high school, right? We see a bunch of these freshmen are all looking around, and they're just seeing everybody in the gym. They take a look at Hina, and everybody's like, oh man, she's really hot, I like her, right? And they also look over to Chinatsu, she's like, oh man, she looks really cool. Word is, she doesn't have a boyfriend, right? And of course, Kyo and Taiki, who are on the badminton floor, hear all these people just raving about Chinatsu. And Taiki's sort of just like, hey, I know Chinatsu, and I know how good of a person she is. I've just got to be confident in myself not to, like, get wrapped up in all of this, right? And Kyo makes a note of, like, hey, Taiki, I guess you're not going to be able to rest the rest of the year with all this going on, right? At this point, all of a sudden, we see that Nishida and another one of the now third year of badminton players are all talking. And everybody's like, oh, hey, that's a new student over there on the girls' badminton team. Because apparently this isn't something that happens very often, right? And we see this girl goes and swings up her shuttlecock and goes to hit it, right? And it sort of runs into the net a little bit and plinks down. But as she does this, she sort of starts to fall back a little bit. And behind her is actually one of the baskets where all of the shuttlecocks are. And sadly, this girl sort of trips into it, falls down, and all of the shuttlecocks sort of go up into the air and fall back down on her, right? And everybody's just like, oh, hey, Akari, are you fine? This girl's name is Akari, by the way. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm just used to this. And everybody's like, oh, hey, that's a problem. And like, oh, hey, that isn't your typical badminton racket, is it? She's like, no, I accidentally grabbed my older brother's by mistake, right? And at this point, Taiki and Kyo walk up to the Nishida and DR Batman guy who are talking as... all of a sudden, Taiki's like, hey, looks like a real character joined Batman Girls team, which... oh, man. That's one of the best parts about Blue Box, is just the comedy. Like, this is like an offhand remark that didn't need to be there, but just it being there makes this chapter just so much funnier. Just like, man, we got a real character to join that team over there, right? I just find it really funny. At this point, I guess Nishida wasn't with whoever Taiki walked up to, as he runs up and he's like, whoa, whoa, everybody, we've got a massive situation on our hands here, right? And everybody's like freaking out, like, oh, calm down, Nishida, like, what's going on here? And Nishida's just like, hey, there are two outrageous additions in the first years, as we all of a sudden see that the principal is yelling at one of these first years, right? And he's pretty much like, hey, that's no attitude take from me, young man. He's just like, you bump into me and have the gall to give me the stink eye for it. And this kid's just like, hey, look, I already apologized. Like, what else do you want me to do, right? He's like, and the guy's like, hey, my bad, like, hardly counts as, like, an actual apology, right? And he's like, plus you were late this morning and are making bad impressions as a new student at this school, right? But he says, aren't you being a bad student, Yusa? And of course, we know who Yusa is, but this isn't the Yusa we're all used to, right? As we see that this is Yusa's younger brother, we're eventually going to figure out his name is Haruto, but pretty much we see that he has got a very, very bad temper, and that he is Yusa's little brother. One of the Batman people actually says this, like, Yusa's little brother, and like, he must be really good, right? But this guy walks over, and he's just like, hey, who said that? He's just like, who just called me Yusa's little brother? And he's like, hey, I've got a name, and it's Haruto, right? So, this is Haruto, Haruto Yusa. That's a pretty big guy to be on the badminton team, right? Of course, Yusa's the biggest, strongest guy at Sajikawa, so to sort of have his brother here, that's very interesting, right? But this is actually Nishida who said it, and, all of a sudden, Yusa realizes, like, oh crap, I'm sorry, you must be the captain, pardon my rudeness, right? And he then points over to his principal and is like, hey, I'm sorry he caused such a racket earlier, right? And then he looks to and announces to the whole Batman team, he's like, hey, once again, I'm Haruto Yusa, and I'll be joining the team. I've come here to win at Nationals, thank you for having me, right? At this point, Haruyu walks over and he just looks at Yusa, he's like, oh, hey, another kid who's all, talk and no walk, right? And of course, Taiki hears him, he's like, hey, who are you saying is all talk? Another just comedy gold moment, right? We cut to a little bit later where Yusa is walking around, and eventually he gets next to Taiki. He looks over to Taiki and just says, like, hey, where's the bathroom? Taiki points him in the direction, and Kyo sort of points it out, and since he didn't put an honorific on it, Yusa doesn't realize that Taiki is a year above him and is thus his senpai. Another just fun little joke. There's a little note where Taiki and Chinatsu sort of walk by each other and have that moment of, hey, how's it going, right? As all of a sudden they do this, as Taiki's walking past Chinatsu drinking a sports drink, he gets hit in the head of a shuttlecock, right? And this is none other than Akari, who was, of course, the girl in the girls' Batman team, who's very clumsy from earlier, right? She starts to run and almost falls in, like, headfirst into Taiki, right? But ends up being able to stop in time, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, that was really close, I almost ran into you there, right? And she's like, I'm sorry, I'm just always tripping here, right? And Taiki sort of just gives her a smile, is like, hey, be careful from now on, right? And we sort of see that she blushes a little bit, right? And Taiki's just like, oh, hey, my bad. And he sort of picks up the shuttlecock and gives it to her, right? She's just like, hey, I'm sorry about that shuttlecock earlier, right? So he hands it back to her, and she starts to run back over to Net. But before she can get over there, Taiki just says, like, hey, wait up. Whenever you make your shot, you should keep your elbow in a fixed position, right? And Akari sort of takes this like, oh, my elbow? As one of the people calls her over for a match, so she goes back over. As Taiki walks back over to where Haruto is, right? And Haruto just says, like, hey, I didn't realize you knew Akari already, right? And Taiki's like, Akari? Because of course she did not hear who she was earlier. And I almost spoiled it out there, but Haruto just says, like, hey, it's really hard calling her by her last name, right? And Taiki's like, what are you talking about, right? As Haruyu says, oh, you don't know? That girl is Hyodo's little sister. Of course, Hyodo is the other, like, Hyodo is Haru's rival guy, so this is his little sister. This is another really big deal. As Taiki is like, oh, that means that we have Yusa's little brother and Hyodo's little sister here at Emily? That's, like, insane. As Taiki is like, man, looks like I definitely won't be able to rest for the rest of the year. As all of a sudden we see that Hikari is going in to swing another shuttlecock, and she's like, my elbow. As she actually does what Taiki told her to do, and makes a shot, and she's just like, oh, so that guy was Inamata-senpai. Showing that she may have a little bit of a thing going on for Taiki already, which, I hate to break to you, girl, but Taiki's always got himself a basketball girl. I don't think he needs a badminton girl, right? But that's where we end off Blue Box. I really, really like this chapter, sort of seeing two new big additions to the cast, being that with Haruto and Hikari. I just love both of their introductions a whole lot. Next up is the Elusive Samurai, chapter number 128. This chapter is titled Destiny 1337. I almost need to do like an Elusive Samurai speedround because there's not a whole lot going on in this chapter. We see that Tokuyuki has a new sword. It's called Onimaru. It is a hereditary Hojo sword. And the big thing is it's very heavy, right? Shiba and Tokuyuki start to get into a battle. Shiba's got a specialty sword made by Masamune, which is got holes in it, so it's actually very light. And it makes it so he can wield it with one hand, so he can be on the defensive while trying to not get hit by Tokuyuki, right? There's a little bit of a thing where Tokuyuki just gets cut a lot by him, and all of a sudden, Kiei's just like, oh man, Tokuyuki's so weak, and insults him, and for some reason, it makes Tokuyuki stronger, right? Pretty much the whole thing is that Onimaru, which is a sword, is passed down from the Hojo clan, so it's got all the memories of all the other Hojo embedded inside of it. So all of a sudden, Tokuyuki starts thinking about his family, and he's like, wow, Onimaru actually starts to feel lighter now. And he's going down and fighting with Shiba, and he's just like, hey, remembering my family and understanding everything, he's just like, what's the whole thing? He's like, hey, this sword holds the hopes of generations of my ancestors, and of course your Shige, and his 300 surviving retainers behind watching me. And he says, all of that gives this blade speed. Sheen and Kodro, sort of in the peanut gallery, sort of just make a note of, oh, hey, look at that. Tokuyuki fight equal good now. And they're sort of just going and fighting. And there's like, oh, hey, that's Onimaru, the Blade of Destiny, fit for our caring lord. At this point, Tokuyuki does like a flip over Shiba and gets the high ground. Hey, Anakin, it's the high ground, right? Whatever that Star Wars Episode 3 meme is. And he is now on the upside of Shiba. And it's sort of, Tokuyuki's like, hey, I've got a plan. And he's like, hey, Shiba, please follow me, as he starts running up towards the opposing army at the top of the hill. And Shiba's just like, hey, what the fuck? And that's where we end off the chapter. Like I said last time, if you don't have anything nice to say about Elusive Samurai, don't say anything at all. Akiye sucks. Yoshige was better. The Onimaru thing is actually sort of cool. I do like how it's like a Blade of Destiny fit for our caring lord, but I just haven't been into Elusive Samurai since Yoshige passed earlier this year, so I say it like the manga died, but no, like, Yoshige is just a character. I haven't been into the series since he died, so yeah, with that, we're just going to move on to the final chapter here, which is Witch Watch, chapter number 128. This chapter is titled The Day of the Disaster, part number 15. We start the chapter with all the main cast sort of sitting in that gazebo, right? As they're all looking in a sort of crystal ball, which Nico used one of her spells to be able to look through to sort of see how Morito is doing, right? Kanji pokes his head down and is like, hey, we're trying to look for a twilight, but we haven't been able to actually get a visual on it yet, but we're trying as hard as we can. We also see that Nimue is up in the sky as the hawk, actively also looking for the twilight, and she sort of steals her resolve to saying like, hey, I will find a twilight, and I'll do it using my own transformation magic. Because, of course, she's a hawk, and hawks have notoriously great eyes, right? We cut back over to Ron, who is still, or Morito, who is still fighting with Ron. The two of them sort of go back and forth, and Morito is just like, all right, hey, I'm counting on all of you guys finding the Twilight and putting it into my hand. But he's like, but to do that, I have to be able to stagger Rand for a few seconds, right? At this point, we sort of cut over, so it seems like some time has passed, and actually Nimue has found a Twilight and has now been put into Chek's mouth, who is, of course, Momochi's bird, right? So it seems like at any second here, they can actively send a Twilight into Morito's hand, right? And Kanchi sort of makes one of the crows that, like, call to sort of give Morito, like, the signal of, hey, we found it. At this point, Morito rushes into where Ron is, and he uses the Kaigoku muscle jail to be able to get all that power and put one really, really good punch into Ron, right? And he sort of does a little bit of a flurry of blows using a move that he's calling Purgatory's Flute, which, holy shit, is that just like an amazing technique name? But Ron is sort of like, oh man, he's aiming only for my lungs here. Like, what is he doing, right? As we see that Ron's lungs are starting to get a little bit of a strain on him, right? As all of a sudden, everybody's like, all right, is that it? Was that the diversion we needed? But suddenly, Ron comes back. And during this, he takes his finger and tears it across his neck. And of course, in doing this, he sort of like chops out and like takes out the skin, cuts himself, and has blood fly out of his neck. And this blood sort of shoots out and hits Morito right in the eyes, temporarily blinding him, right? Not only is this like just an amazing move, but also because Ron is undying, it makes sense to why he can do this, right? So because Morito is temporarily blind, he ends up using the Bright Eyes technique to be able to go through and like, all right, I can still see Ron's life force, so as long as I can put in our Kaigoku and punch him good, I may be able to stagger him, right? But as he does this, he puts all of his strength into a punch, and as he punches this thing, he's like, hey, there was barely any impact here, as he's finally able to open his eyes, and he sees it's actually an arm that he punched and destroyed. Because of course, this time Ron ripped off one of his arms, sent all of his energy into it to sort of trick Morito into punching it, and created an amazing diversion, once again using his undying powers, right? Ron then comes in, does an uppercut towards Morito, and he calls that Sky Splitter, another just cool technique name, as Morito flies up and lands on the ground, blood coming out of his mouth. Morito does not look good at all, right? Nico is screaming from inside the gazebo like, Moi, no, no, no! As everybody's just like, no, Morito failed, it's all really over. As we see that Ron uses the Bright Eyes technique and sees that Morito no longer has any vitality or any energy left in him, like, he is truly done. We also see that his arm is growing back, so yeah, of course, undying, that's not gonna kill him. He would have already tried a million times if it was. So Ron pretty much walks over, and he sort of gives Morito a compliment. He says, like, hey, Morito, you are the strongest opponent I've ever faced, and I'm proud that I'll get to say that to you before you die, right? And he just says, Morito, you are like a little brother to me, as he walks over to Morito, and it looks like he's getting ready to end this. Like, he's getting ready to punch his head off, and that's going to be all of it, right? And Kanchi and everybody's like, dodge, Morito, you've got to do it. But Morito just sticks up his hand, right? And he touches Ron's chin as he just says, this is what I've waited for. As he thinks back to the youngest of the four masters, as he says, you're finally within arm's reach. As he finally uses Chu-In-Ga-Mu, which is of course the move that creates a minor amount of magic that flows through everybody's bodies and bursts it in one small point. And while it's not powerful, it is the single move that he needed to be able to rock Ron's world. As we see, Morito finally lands it, and it hits Ron, and Ron's just like, what? He just popped me in the head. He just shook my brain. Like, what's going on here? As this is the second today needed, Miharu, like, screams for Momochi to transport the Twilight into Morito's hand. It does, and while Ron is staggering back, Morito grabs the Twilight, plants it into Ron's arm, and in the final page of the chapter, the Twilight finally blooms out of Ron's arm as the battle is finally ended. this was such a poetic chapter. The beginning of the chapter, finding the twilight, to Morito using every one of his last abilities, until eventually he is seen to be defeated. But he finally won with the weakest move out of everything he had. He finally used a Chu-In-Gamu and rocked Ron's world, and it finally worked in such a satisfying moment. And just seeing the tree bloom out of Ron's arm. It's just what Kenta Shinohara does best. I love Kenta Shinohara, every single one of his works. I mean, I think Astro Lost in Space is probably the best series that I have ever watched and read. Like, I just love Kenta Shinohara, and this chapter just proves why on so many levels. So, yeah, Morito has finished off Ron here in just an amazing showing. And yeah, with that is really all the chapters this week. That is all 13 of them. So, as I said earlier in the video, now is the point where we wrap everything up, and of course, we talk about where I ranked every chapter this week, right? And with that ending, I guess it doesn't come to a surprise to anybody whenever I say Witch Watch was my favorite chapter of the week. Like I said, it's just such a poetic chapter with so much good to it. I just couldn't find anything wrong with it through and through. And I always read Witch Watch last because it is truly a series that will brighten my day every single time. And this chapter just did it so much, right? After that was Blue Box. I really enjoyed seeing all the new characters. Undead Unlock, I didn't really talk about it too much or seem too enthusiastic, but I really do love the moment where Rip and Lotla show up with the Blade Runner on together. And after that, going into the rest of the Ryle and Flank, it's Makani Banashi, Martial Master Sumi, One Piece Mama Yu, Kagura Barchi, Kill Blood, Ichinose Family Deadly Sins, Elusive Samurai, Nui's Exorcist, and Two on Ice. I, of course, had to put Two on Ice at the bottom because, while I thought it was sort of fine, I'm not keeping the series, so I really have no other reason to continue to sort of talk about it, right? After that point, Nui's Exorcist, as I said, just sucked, and I actually thought there was more value in Elusive Samurai than Nui's Exorcist, right? Which is a little funny, but again, I really think the exceptional chapters this week were Witch Watch, Blue Box, Undead, Akane Banashi, Martial Master Sumi, and One Piece to an extent, and sort of there, more in the middle, was One Piece Mama Yu Yu Kagurabachi, those two newbies. Of course, Kill Blue sort of has its problems, and of course, Ichinose's family had those same problems, right? Overall, I think that's a solid list. Of course, I really like that top three of Witch Watch, Blue Box, and Undead. Definitely think it's good. But then it comes to who did I think was the best character this week, right? I definitely think that there were a lot of good contenders. I mean, from almost every series, St. J. Garcia Saturn had a crazy entry, right? Not like the most valuable player in a good way, but in a bad way. Rip and Lotla combined, really, really cool. Nito had a cool finishing move again. I really liked Alyssa sort of punch into the ground. It made it pretty cool. Let's see, through the rest of these chapters, I don't think, like, Master Moro's, like, my pick for Nui's Exorcist, right? Of course, Chocho Kunjakute had another great moment, but I did give it to Chocho last week, so I didn't, like, really feel like giving it to him again this week, even though I feel like he probably deserved it more this week than last week. Then, of course, we had also, who's his face, Ron and Morito. That fight was just so insane and so good. But I actually gave it to Akari Hodo from Blue Box, because I actually really liked her introduction, and while I also liked Haruto's introduction, I just think I sort of connected more with Akari's, sort of how she, in sort of space of a chapter, sort of learned something and already got to put that to the test. I just really sort of like that sentiment, and also I like her design pretty much, right? Pretty cool, so. Yep, I definitely said Akari was my favorite character of the week. And with that, I really don't have too much else to say. That's really all I have to say here. Of course, I'm GoPlasma231 here on YouTube. I don't know. I do have this out on podcasting services, so if you want to go listen to it there and you're not finding it off of YouTube, please be my guest. Or if you're listening to a podcast, listen to it on YouTube. Subscribe to me, right? It always helps out a whole lot. I do a lot of other anime and manga content, so if you like this, you're probably going to like most of my other videos. So that's really all there is to say there. With that, I really don't have too much else to say. Again, this was Weekly Shonen Jump issue number 45 of 2023. I'll be back with issue number 26 next time. But yeah, I don't have too much else to say, and yeah. New Exorcist sort of sucks, so yeah. Go Plasma 231 out.